tonight. When I was trying to work out what to say, Chris said, just talk a little bit about yourself. Tell us a bit. We don't know very much
about you. I'm on. So I could tell you lots of things, like I spent the first 18 years of my life living in Sandringham. I loved the beach. I've already told you back for Collingwood. I had great Christian parents. I was brought up in a Christian home. I could tell you lots of things like that, but I think it's probably more interesting to tell you some stories. I think if I tell you some stories about me, you're probably going to learn a lot more about me anyway. So let's start off with our presentation, if we can get it on. I'm a reluctant missionary. I think that as we talk, you might hear a little bit more about it. And it's just going to share with you some of the journey that I've had. We're hoping this is going to go. No? It's on.
Yep.
It is now. It's not going the wrong way. That's not me. Thank you. Well, I'll try again. Okay. So I first met my first missionary when I was 9 years old, and I thought she was really rather strange. She had a pink twin set, and she had her hair tied back in a bun, and she was looking really, really boring, and she came along to talk to our church. But when she started talking, I thought, this lady's interesting. She worked with children in India. And I thought, that sounded really good. But I didn't like the idea of not being married and didn't want to wear pink twin sets. So when I was 14, I was at a Scripture Union camp. And I became a Christian at that camp. And my hut leader was named Heather. And she said to me, what do you want to do when you become a Christian? Now with your life, what's ahead of you? And I said, I think I want to work with children in India. But I don't want to be a spinster in a pink twin set. we've got to go back one. So I guess for me, the biggest thing was where do I start from here? So I went off to school, and then I wanted to be a physio, and I studied to be a paediatric physio. And in the ensuing years, I met and married a really wonderful Christian guy and had two gorgeous sons. And I was back at work part-time as a physio. So my life was all going pretty well. But then there was a shadow over all of this, and that was that my parents both died quite tragically when they were 47. So they didn't actually get to see my sons or get to see me growing up in the journey as an adult. And then when our sons were just about ready to start school, my husband's health deteriorated very quickly. And then I began a very complex parenting role, caring role, working role, as he never returned to work. So deep down, the dream of going off to work in Asia sort of diminished very quickly. And yet I never understood how it could ever eventuate. It was there. It was something I thought about, but I couldn't connect with. And I'd often sit in my chair, or I'd light my candles, and I'd look and I'd think, is this ever going to be a reality? And then during that time, I learnt to just always trust God. Then 15 years later, my two grown-up sons and I found ourselves alone in the family home. We'd had some very challenging and difficult times, and suddenly I was on my own and my world dramatically changed. And I wondered what would happen next, and then I realised I was actually 47, the same age that my parents were when they died. And I said to God, hey, I've got lots of questions. And they were about how would I manage socially, emotionally, financially, physically, and all my insecurities surfaced. But God was ever near, ever faithful, and just kept me focused on my role as a mother and in my work and in my church life. Soon after, I met Reverend Alan Maher, who's the head of Baptist churches in Victoria at the time, and he sent an email. And he sent this email with a job description for a physiotherapist to go and work in Thailand. And you can probably see why the map there, to work in an area along the Thai-Burma border. First of all, I had never been overseas. I'd been to Tasmania, but that's all I'd been. I didn't have a passport. I didn't even know where this place was. And he sent this along. I didn't have a passport. And I thought, how on earth could I do something like this? And then at the bottom of the email, he said, Glenys, is this the voice of Jesus talking to you? I thought, oh, that's a bit heavy. So I sat down, I read the job description, and then I discovered actually everything that they wanted I could do. I'd done somewhere in my life, and I'd done somewhere in my professional life. So this shiver went down my spine. It was as if this was a job description for me. And I'd been working for 23 years as a physio, and I had 6 months long service leave. And they said I wouldn't need very much money, I just had to get there. So I started a very intensive interview and training process, and in 2002, and with the blessings of my sons, family, friends and church, I packed my bags and I was off on adventure. Well, it wasn't India, but it was sort of in that direction. Now, as part of the orientation course, I had to go to a meeting, and I met this lady, and her name was Joan, and she was 92 years old, and she said, I've been the person allocated to you to pray for you as a missionary. I said, whoa, I'm not a missionary. I'm a therapist. Not a missionary, I'm a therapist. There's a bit of a difference. And she said, oh, so what was your mission? So then I gave her a really good answer about being passionate about my job and my faith life and da-da-da-da. And so she just sat there, and then she said, but you're going on Jesus' mission, so you better find out what it is. And you're there for 6 months, so I hope you find it. So, and then quietly she turned to me and she said, I will pray for you, my little missionary, every Friday at 9 a.m. So, a missionary, that's not what I signed on for. And I'd been briefed and I was ready to go. But one of the things was that they told me I needed to be prepared for village life, and I had to learn to watch and listen and learn the language. And that the area I was going to, this area up here, particularly where it here just dips in that area there, they had two major delicacies. The first one was called swamp rat, and the second one was monkey feces curry. And I thought I might be a vegetarian. I did see the monkey feces curry once in the village, and I just looked at it. But as a physio, I thought, how am I going to be a physio when I don't actually speak any of these languages? So the area I was going to speak Thai and two Karen languages. So with the blessing of my two sons, lots of farewells and hugs from people, I disappeared for 6 months. Clutching my passport, I went through those doors at Tullamarine and I gulped and I said, God, what on earth have I done? So I had some time in language and cultural training, and then I set off in this truck with my bike and lots of supplies out to the border, which is 5 hours away from Chiang Mai. So this is the area. This is Thai-Burma border. This is the Salwan River. One side's Thailand, the other side's Burma. Now, remember I said to you, Heather was there when I became a Christian, and Heather married Trevor Smith, and they worked at the leprosy hospital in Thailand. And when I was involved in the process and had to do interviews, she was very surprised to find out that it was me, and she said, so we had a lovely reunion soon after I arrived, 35 years later. She said, oh, I'm not surprised it was you, I've been waiting for you. So I thought, well, there's another affirmation. I really am in the right place. So the journey began with Salo, the enthusiastic 26-year-old Korean nurse, and myself, and wow, I was at a steep learning curve, adjusting to culture, language, poverty, injustice, no mobile phones, and a very rare internet connection, and village life, and the heat, and the heat, and the heat. Many times, I used to think about that question, what am I doing and why am I there? So that's me at the project. Now, there's a few challenges to village life. First of all, very rarely do you actually get in a truck and go somewhere and you get out. There's a lot of walk. The flooded rivers, boats being in piranha-infested waters was another interesting occasion. The toilets, the bathrooms, and as you could see, sometimes we're lucky that has a roof. Sometimes you're not quite so lucky. There's no roof, there's no walls. And that there is where you squat, and that's the water to wash yourself. I didn't go at that village. I hung on for many, many hours while we were there. I just found that a little bit difficult because just to, up above that was the school where all the children were. And they're always very interested to know how the fine lady goes to the toilet. My role was teaching and working with children and working with the parents and the grandparents, as you can see here. A very challenging but beautiful time. Sometimes it was mud, lots and lots of mud, and the remoteness of the villages. You know, I do a home visit here and I get in the car and I'm there in 20 minutes. You know, we could spend 3 or 4 hours to get to the area. And slightly different than working in eastern suburbs of Melbourne. So the other thing that underlined it all was the problems around the refugee status. And this is a refugee camp. You can see in the top picture, that's what a lot of the houses are like. Very poor and very few facilities, limited water supply and no electricity. And again, you can see me there, the camp's at the bottom, and then I'm standing again at the border. The challenges of the disability was always a real problem. And for me, that extreme poverty, so that's a typical kitchen. This is where you cook. The family would sleep around here. This is just a bamboo floor. There's the rice supply. That would be the vegetables for the day. This would be the drinking water. This would be the washing water. And that would be existing, what existed in most of the houses. But I kept remembering what Joan said, what's mission? Now, this was supposed to be all animated and coming in one after the other, but it doesn't matter, man. It's all on at once. So what does mission mean? Okay, let's just look at this. So it's an important task. It's a responsibility. These are all from thesaurus and different dictionaries. It's our calling, our life work, our vocation, our objective, purpose, pursuit, commitment. So maybe we do have a mission after all, and maybe if we've got some of these strong passions, maybe we are missionaries. That's an interesting thought, isn't it? But I know I'm passionate about being a paediatric physio, and I've been really lucky. I've worked with babies for the last 37 years, and I work on activating their brains and their neuronal pathway. So when a baby's born, they're pretty splattered like this. They can't move, they can't do anything. And within 12 months of their life, they start to do all these amazing things until they're up walking. And these are the sophisticated things us adults can do with our bodies. There's a developmental sequence. There's a process that goes through. And the interesting thing is that I need to know that process and where the child is on that continuity. I guess for me, there's always hope because the brain has a beautiful ability to prepare itself, heal itself, and the plasticity of the brain is something that is amazing to watch. So where is an impact on the developing brain? So you can see some of the children here. Where there's been that impact, what it means is that the child's development will stop at that point of time and we have to reactivate it. Or they may lose some skills and we have to go back to the point they lost them and try and regain them. So most of the children that I work with in Thailand have an insult to their brain that I don't see here in Australia. So that's usually birth difficulties, infections like malaria, and it's a delight and an absolute privilege to actually reactivate their brains and get some progress in their mobility and function. It's very humbling. To share time with them. We have lots of fun. We have lots of sadness. But it's a delight to work with these beautiful children, both here and in Thailand, and being part of the miracle of parents finding hope. We've got really, really interesting things, but I thought I might teach you one. There's a skill called crossing the midline, and those in the midst here are teachers or know anything about teaching know that you need to be able to write like this. Well, most of us write this way. Some people who are left-handed write that way. We have a skill called crossing the midline. So if you get a bunch of 2, 3, 4, 5-year-olds and line them all up here, so a 2-year-old has the ability to cross their arms at their knee level. A 3-year-old can cross their arms at this level. By 4, they are starting to do it at this level, and they need to be able to do it at that level to go off to school. So that's called crossing the midline. The important thing about it is that I know anybody who can do that, yeah, you're good. Anybody who can do that actually has a well-developed brain. If they don't, they're having difficulty. You see the 3 little boys there, all the same age? This is called crossing the midline. Oh, back. You can see here, this little one here's got it. This one's cheating because he's actually using his arms to help do it. This one's got one side happening. So for me, I look at certain skills that children are doing, and that can tell me what their little brains are doing. Okay. You're going to have a turn. I've got an assistant. He knows nothing about what's going to happen to him in the next 2 minutes. He's going to put a hat on back the front and be a rapper.
Yep, okay. Yep.
And I'm going to talk you through a short rap, which has got activities in that's going to activate your brains and your neuronal pathways like I do with my children. And just to give you a little bit of an exercise. Is this all right to do dance in the church, boss? Anyway, you just have to bear a little bit till we get into a little bit of a rhythm here. And all you have to do is follow on what I say, and they will too. Would you like somebody to come out and help you? Okay, can we have another volunteer? Yes, come on, let's have a second volunteer. Okay, it goes a bit like this. Would you all please stand? If you elderly ones to sit, you can, but it's preferable if you stand. And just follow me, all right? And you have to listen. Are we watching? Okay, let's go. Oh, you may protest about your aches and pains. You can stand or sit. There may even be some gains. We start with some simple moves designed to get you a-going. A wiggle, a giggle, a move or two. Let's see what you're showing. Now, eyes to the front and look and hear. No one is watching you from the rear. So, roll your hands, move up and down. Can you change them without a frown? Bottom to the left as you change direction. Bottom to the right as you change direction. Roll your hands, move up and down. Can you change them without a frown? Stretch and reach and listen. Well, crossing the midline is hard to tell. So stretch and reach and listen. Well, crossing the midline is hard to tell. Right elbow to your left knee. Left elbow to your right knee. Right elbow to your left knee. Left elbow to your right knee. Now right elbow to your left ear. Left elbow to your right ear. Do stop worrying. It's really okay. Your body can't do it. There is no way. Now, with your left hand, draw large sixes up in the air, while your left foot makes clockwise circles in the air. That's very hard and it's really not fair. So breathe in deeply, shrug your shoulders up and let them out with a great big huff. Turn to your friend who is by your side, shake and greet them and forget about your pride. Now turn to your partner on the other side and shake and greet them and forget about your pride. So we are finished. You did so well. New neuronal pathways well activated. I hope you don't need any sports gel. Please be seated. You've made some new neuronal connections. I asked you to do 2 things that you cannot do and your brain can't do. but your brain tried to do it. So even out as an adult, your brain will continue. That's what I tap into in my work. So sorry about that, but let's just get an idea of what goes on. Just need to get myself resorted here. Okay, I'm going to tell you a couple of stories. So this is a story about a little girl. I'll just move across so that I can see. So she had a very traumatic injury in the middle of her back and had extensive surgery to repair the damage. She had damage done to her internal organs and needed extensive surgery. Soon after, her father died. In shock, the mother delivered the third baby 2 months early. So mum had suddenly a very traumatic time. February 2016, her mother was told that the beep-born wouldn't be able to sit, walk, and she would be incontinent for life. The first time our team went out to see her was a very difficult time for her mother. She was widowed and caring for their three little children. Matt, can we have the lights down a little bit? Yeah. They lived in a very poor, remote village, 4 hours away from the project. And she was unable to sit or move, and she was very weak and traumatised. And she was unable to return to the village, school, and to be with her friends. So here we've got two people on our team. So this is the physio and this is the physio aide. And here they are trying to stand her up for the first time. So the decision was for her to come in and spend some time at the project. So this was just before I arrived, and you can see Joan and I there with her. She was quiet, she was sad and often cried, and she was quite traumatised and used very limited language, her mother and staff. She was reluctant to play, and she had trouble sitting, and she couldn't move. So this is her being needing to be held up to sit. Everything I do is about play-based. So we started with play, and we got a little play group going with a few of the other children, and she began to relax and play. So using play-based therapy, I worked on a sitting balance. So you can see here how she needed to lean up against, and you can see how weak she is in her legs, very little muscle development there and in her hands. And this is her mum, a courageous little mum, and we had 2 weeks of us working our butts off with her morning and afternoon, and you can see that she really developed a really good sitting balance. And you can see she's able to play here, which is really what children want to be able to do. We wanted to strengthen her arms and legs because the damage in her spine also involved her arms as well as her legs. You can see some of the activities that we did there with her. And we wanted her to be able to tap into some of her sort of cognitive stuff, and we did that by doing lots of games. And you can see there she ended up being able to move around quite well. She also wanted to be able to stand, so we were able to do a bit of standing and assisted walking. And this is in the first stage, where we actually tried her with some braces and a little walker, but she ended up not requiring those. We were able to activate the muscles in her legs, and we were able to get her going in a couple of weeks. So the outcome was that she was actually then able to move around, to crawl, to climb, and she started to get sensation in her legs. So there was a lot of change. Here's Joan playing a game with her. We had chocolate frogs from Australia, and they were good bribes along the way. She became very alert and chatty, cheeky and interactive, and she started using Thai and Korean and even talking English to Joan and I. She loved to play puzzles and games and language activities, and this helped build her confidence and emotional well-being. And her mother was thrilled, and she had some hope for her daughter and her family's future. So it's very humbling for me to be able to be part of such a miracle time. And you can see the difference in this little girl in a matter of weeks. So yeah, there's lots of wonderful stories you can tell, but they're not always the reality. And I'm going to tell you a story about one that's not quite as exciting outcome. We travelled for 2 hours. We travelled for 2 hours on slippery roads with four-wheel drive and chains, and it was a very remote animist area. There was no electricity, it was really dirty. There was no water, and most of the water was carried in from the stream. And we were warned that the people were very poor, they were primitive, and that as a Christian organisation we may not be welcomed in that area. There were a few adults around, for this was rice planting time. The teacher hadn't arrived at the village this week, so as a great novelty, I was quickly followed at a distance, mind you, by all the village children up the very steep and slippery path. They were cautious at first, as some had not seen a white foreigner. Curious like most children, they then accompanied us and guided us to the very small and dilapidated bamboo hut. This hut has no windows, which is the animus practice. It was very dark, and when I went to the door, the smell was overwhelming. Niwat, 14 years of age, sat huddled in the corner, sitting in his filth and very ashamed of his incontinence. Even though the sun was shining, there was something very spooky about this animus village. The goosebumps were all over me, and yet it was 35 degrees. I remember dark times in my own life, and I felt totally overwhelmed. Niwat dragged himself on his tummy a short distance to the doorway, and I struggled with the smells and the filth and the powerlessness of his extreme poverty and disability. I too wanted to run away back down that hill. But Jesus quietly spoke words of encouragement to me. Forget about your own stuff, Glenys. Look past your own fears and darkness and the filth and find the boy. Then something amazing happened. Niwa looked at me with such an understanding look, and he smiled, and his shiny white teeth and eyes radiated in the darkness and the dirt and the sadness. And then I had the courage to go on, and I knew the young people on the team were struggling too and waiting for my responses. The children told us that Niwa had been a village school captain, and he was very popular in the hope for his family. His father was dead, his elderly mother was left to raise five children. The two older brothers had gone to Bangkok to work a year ago, and they had not been heard of since. And there were two little girls who were quite feral in the village. They came back at lunchtime and gave some water to Niwat and any food they could find. But then he had two major attacks of the malaria within a few months, and this was the cause of his condition. His mother was unable to get the necessary medication, and he developed complications to his brain and couldn't walk. He couldn't talk, and he had great difficulty eating. So the once big, strong, healthy boy was thin, weak and very stiff with spasticity. Salo regularly had a saying which translated, "Can we fix?" There's lots of words in Thai language that's got some really interesting connotations. She would say, "Can we fix?" knowing that sometimes there was nothing we could do. And again she turned to me and she said, "Glenn, can we fix?" So we started to ask and talk to Niwat and talk to the children. And his continuing penetrating eyes did not go off my face. And he kept going with his bewitching smile. And his answer was very simple. He wanted to walk. He wanted to go back to school. Now, being a mother, I really wanted to wash him. I wanted to find what was underneath all that dirt. But there was no water. We gave him milk and some chalky biscuits, which he devoured, but he did have trouble eating and swallowing. Then we started working with him, and his amazing courage, and I was to find a brain that started to respond. And he stood and he worked with us. And after some therapy, we had him up standing and he was staggering. And he started to take a few steps. And then he wanted to walk and to walk. And it was only a small area. So I said, "Okay, we'll do 20 laps. So we did 20 laps across the landing. And he just wanted to keep walking. And all the village children cheered him on. Eventually the village leader came back, and he'd been running for an hour to get there from the farm. And he helped to walk Niwat, and he said he'd come back and he would help him. And as we went back down the hill, it was really slippery and muddy because it was pouring rain now. I was overwhelmed by the darkness and the loss of this little boy and his mobility and his freedom. Where was their hope? What was the future for Niwat? I felt deeply saddened that we couldn't fix this one. He seemed trapped. The only light in that place for this therapist was the radiance that shone from the boy and his eyes and the smile. Later that night, as we were settling in a nearby village, There was no electricity, and as I looked out, you could see the flickering of candles. And I felt very overwhelmed. But then I was reminded that Jesus spoke of being the light and finding light in the darkness. And it challenged me to a greater understanding of his impact of the many places of darkness. So when we talked about what had happened that day, the driver, Arun, said to me, he talked to Niwot, and Niwot said it wasn't that I helped him to walk, it was because I had just come and I'd spent time with him, and all the village children had thought he was special because I had visited him. Thalo, the manager of the team, said, remember what the motto is for the women out here in the villages. She did what she could when she could. That was the motto. And that helped me a little bit. The following year, I went back to Thailand. I asked about Niwot. And sadly, he died a few months later from another bout of malaria. Soon after, Thalo and the team visited the mother. And she said, why did the foreign grandmother come to see her boy? And the answer was, they said Glenn wanted to meet Niwot. This began an opportunity for the team to share a little of God's hope in that very animist village and what was such a dark and sad place. Niwot was such a challenge to me, not to be overwhelmed by the complexities, but to remember why I was there, just to be open before God and let God's Spirit do the prompting and the leading. To dream of the release of those trapped from without and within is to dance with God in heaven, and this is costly. This is what ambition's about. I've now been back 14 times to the project every year in my holidays, and Thalo and her amazing team have developed, and there is a school, there's a day centre, there's a therapy centre, and there's a vocational centre, and they've become really strong advocates for the future for children and young people with disabilities in that area. At times I can't believe that this God-created miracle had been happening to me. And when I stand here sharing with you, it is really quite overwhelming, and I'm very humbled that somehow God chose this to be my mission. I hope to go back again in 2017, and I know that I'll meet more children that maybe I can help, like Niporn, but there'll be children like Niwot as well. And I'm going to continue to learn and be stretched and feel very privileged to have this miracle of God's grace and goodness in my life. It's always looking for and finding the hope of Jesus in most unexpected places is what the call is for me. I'm very dependent on God as he teaches me to juggle the balance between my life here as a physio, as a mother, as a grandmother, as a sister and friend, here at church, and with the Karen people here and in Thailand. This call for me to be faithful, to come as you are, feels ever before me, and God continues to offer the challenge to go way out of my comfort zone, here and in Thailand. I'm not sure exactly what it means, now I'm nearly 66, or where it's going to take me, but I know I'm very well accompanied, and that I do not need to fear, but to trust and have faith in God's promptings. There have been some really wonderful moments and also some dark places that I can align with from my own story. And I'm encouraged that I'm not able to fix some things as a physio. And these conditions I don't see here in Australia. When I'm encountered over there, I think it's really unfair. But God reminds me, I just need to go. I just have to be there and come and be what God requires of me. I feel deeply humbled, overwhelmed and extremely privileged by this opportunity, and I'm aware that I am indeed very lucky to be able to live out a dream I had when I was 15. I'm so amazed at God's grace and goodness to me. He's indeed a God of surprises and delights in sharing us with the most unexpected blessings. This little boy Manas has been a changing experience for me. This is the first time I met him, and then again, and then this is just recently. That's what the story of God's grace is all about. And this is, he comes and he lives in an area that's not a Christian area, and the work that the team's been doing with that little boy over the last 14 years has seen the growth and the development and acceptance of disability in a very difficult area on the border. The eagle is my totem. Its great capacity and strength to rise up above anything. And many times I've been deeply comforted by this image. But I also love the thought of the baby eagle being helpless and vulnerable, sitting in the nest high up on the cliff, just waiting for the right time to fly. Many years ago, in one of my many darkest times, I was deeply challenged by this vision and hope of the eagle. And God very clearly told me that I would one day fly above all that had tied me down and endeavoured to squash my spirit. The baby eagle has indeed been off flying with a little bit of help from Singapore Airlines. And I've been able to fulfil a dream and a passion. A few months after I returned from my first visit, I set out to find Joan to thank her. She was praying for me every Friday morning at 9 a.m. Her little missionary. So many times during the 6 months, the thought of her praying for me washed over me with peace and sometimes a sense of humour, because I knew she would be doing it. And it was so encouraging. And I even received 2 cards. She was a woman, not many words. Dear Glenys, still praying, Joan. Second card, still, dear Glenys, still praying, God bless you, Joan. So I went and asked, what's happened? When about 5 or 6 months after I was back, I was at a meeting and I said, I'd like to be able to contact Joan. I want to thank her. I want to tell her the story. And they said, well, she came in every week for prayer time and we told her about your activities. I used to send out an email and she heard about my stories. But then they said she died, and she died 2 months after I got back. I wanted to tell her that the little missionary, reluctant though she was, had found her mission. Thank you to everybody at NRUC for your support and your love and encouragement to me. It's because of that that I started coming to this church, and your belief and your faith in me. Thank you for some beautiful kids. We knitted hats and took 2 last time. You know, I love this reading, Behold, I Stand at the Door and Knock. What I like about it most of all is not the image that, this old Sunday school image that we often used to see. It's what happens after we open the door. Jesus said, I will come in. What happens next? I love this thought. If you are willing, I will gently lead you to new places. And this. Come to stand alongside the poor. Come to struggle with those who seek freedom. Come to resist all that offends God's justice. Come to the living, disturbing God. Back to the, this is the Thai-Burma border. So what about you? Do you have a mission? Are you a missionary? What does it mean? Are we willing to let God into every aspect of our lives, to be open to God, to define, refine and use us? Are we willing to be vulnerable, listening to the murmurings of the Spirit within us? For God calls us to go beyond the known and go beyond the comfortable places. I was taken out of my comfort zone. I still am every time I go over there. I get very, very nervous, and those of my dear friends here in my small group know how nervous I get before I go, because I'm taken so far out of my comfort zone. But God says, I'm there with you, and I always will be. So thank you for sharing with me tonight, and it's my prayer that God will richly bless you and give you the courage and encouragement you need to find your own mission, wherever it is and whatever it is and wherever it will take you. And have fun exploring the flight paths that may be ahead of you. Doesn't matter whether we're 15 or we're 95, God calls us to be passionate about the gifts the latest gifts that he gives each of us. Let's pray. Gracious God, you may not call us to travel overseas or even leave our own home, but you help us to be open to trusting you, to be courageous in praying and discerning what we are passionate about today. Help us to be willing to let you into every aspect of our lives, to be open to your Spirit prompting us as we hand all of it, not some of it, but all of it to you. Loving God, we really want to recommit ourselves anew. We want to find our God-given mission. We want to let your love and your grace and your goodness and your patience work in us today and forever to define, refine and use us. We pray very confidently in the name of Jesus. Amen.